Let's get started. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of American Hit Radio. Glad to be here on this frigid Wednesday. Hope you're warm.
I wanna rock.
I'm Tom Ryan. I'm your host, Heidi Morales Ryan, my lovely wife and co-host here as well, the both of us, to bring you a new edition of American Hit Radio Live as usual. We've started a series at the end of last year based upon some writing that I'm doing called An Alternative Top 40. The premise is kind of simple. It's easy to judge albums by their chart positions and to look at top 40 records in terms of longevity, because more often than not, that has something to say with whether or not a record manages to linger. But there are plenty of examples of great classic records that in their time were overlooked, not really noticed for their greatness.
They've won the hearts and minds of the people, though.
Over time, they eventually, things came around and people began to recognize just how great something was. And so although the record never really got any acclaim in its own time period, it eventually became, as we just said, you know, basically was lauded. Today we're covering these choices that we're making. We started in the year 1964 with our picks, and we're running through them chronologically. And we are right now up to number 11 in our pick, which happens to be in the year 1965. And this is out of the 11 that we have covered. This is only the second to have been a non-American artist so far. It's the only other non-American artist before this was Them, the band by Van Morrison. Mm-hmm. And brings us to this selection for number 11. It's actually The Who, their first album, My Generation.
Good choice.
Absolutely, yes. Now, a lot of people would certainly think, what are you talking about? The Who were huge. Not so. Not so at all. You know, everybody, we've got this like revised memory of the band where we're thinking that they were part of the British invasion and all of their big hits were being played on the radio along with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the Yardbirds
happening.
And the Hollies and all, et cetera, et cetera.
But it wasn't so.
Not the case. The Who really didn't become popular in America until 1967. So we've got a bit of a revised memory here. It's definitely a revisionist memory.
Revisionist history.
Right. Very, very few Americans were really familiar with the early Who because their singles didn't chart. The album didn't, like I said, didn't either. But we're going to try to cover, or at least make up for that in some sense now by playing that first album. It was a reasonably big hit in Great Britain, of course, had a whole bunch of hit singles there, but not the case here. We'll get to that as we go through the record. Well, let's play some of the music. Around this time of The Who's first album, they were popular as really like the leading exponent of a trend in Great Britain called the mod scene, the mods and rockers. And the mods had a certain way of dressing. They also had a certain type of music that they considered to be fashionable. And the mods tended to embrace R&B as opposed to the rockers, as the title suggests, were embracing like 50s rock and roll. People like Gene Vincent and such.
Yeah, like the Teddy Boys.
Right. They were the heroes of the Teddy Boys and the rockers. So the mods were going more toward the R&B side of things. The Who called their own music maximum R&B to play it up. And Pete Townsend in the beginning was really trying his best to write British versions of R&B songs, which was a bit of a change compared to a lot of the other acts that were really going straight for blues around this time. Here's the lead-off track. Perhaps it's an example of Townsend attempting to write something which could have been R&B, but it's got a real youthful feel to it. So it's really kind of hard to tell exactly where it falls. The opening track from the album, as it was called in America, The Who Sings My Generation. Here's the opening track called Out in the Street.
Out! Out in the street. 'Cause I slowly, but I Listen to me, I'm telling you. You look at me, woman, yeah, and tell the truth. I know you're mine, I can't see that you're in need. I'll show you, woman, yeah, that you belong to me. You're gonna know me, know. Know me, know. Know me, know. Yeah, I'm gonna know you.
They are so young here, considering how we know how this band developed. But
it's awesome, though.
You got to try to set your mind back to imagine the year is 1965, and Pete Townshend is playing with the switches on his guitar in the middle of the lead, and there's feedback and distortion and all sorts of sweeping loud noises. They might have been going for R&B, but what they were really doing was sort of like making a version of proto-punk music.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's really, it's no doubt about it. They were incredibly exciting. But James Brown was their hero. And it was James Brown that they were emulating. In fact, the album contains two tracks that were originally recorded and released by James Brown. And they did cover versions of it. And like John Lennon says, most of the times when British bands did covers of any American R&B, it was usually awful. And it's probably not terribly unfair for me to say that it's not too different here. I mean, comparing Roger Daltrey to James Brown, for example, it's not even fair. But, I mean, if you release your version of the song after the original, you ask for it, don't you? So, I mean, people like, of course, the Rolling Stones and Mick Jagger had done the exact same thing and suffered the comparison to some of the people that he was imitating, you know, whether it was Solomon Burke or Otis Redding. And I think in some cases, James Brown as well. So here we can hear Roger Daltrey as he attempts to sing a song that was made famous by James Brown. Second track on the album. It's called I Don't Mind.
What?
Smith.
Roger Daltrey doing, I suppose you could say, a functional version of I Don't Mind, a song originally made popular by James Brown. We just got a nice phone call from a listener who says, I know that song from James Brown Live at the Apollo. And I'm like, yeah, it's only the best, one of the best live albums of all time. And James Brown smokes it. That's where you hear the audience
Absolutely.
Screaming.
Oh, the women are going nuts.
It's so great. Really, if you don't know that album, that is an absolute must. Now, this album is as well. I don't want to give the impression that this is a mediocre album. The only thing about The Who Sings My Generation that could be considered mediocre, in my opinion, are the covers. Because what's happened here is, well, quite frankly, Pete Townsend has pretty much developed like almost full form as a great songwriter, as a representative of British youth. He's just doing a great job of like pretty much speaking what's on the minds of the kids, as opposed to like the Beatles weren't really necessarily doing that. The Beatles were great at love songs and harmonies. The Rolling Stones were great at blues and doing their own version of rock and roll. But Pete Townsend was really coming up with these youth anthems. And this album is chock full of them. As you see, we're going to go through it. Pretty much every song seems to be from the perspective of a teenager with a little bit of wiseness, like somebody who's like older beyond his years, with a very real British perspective. Here's an example of what I'm talking about. This next track, written by Pete Townsend, as pretty much almost everything on the album is. I should point out that the British version was simply called My Generation, and it's almost identical to the American version. We'll get into the differences later. But on the American version, virtually, I think 10 out of the 12 songs are all written by Pete. Well, here's, since we just heard the James Brown tune, let's go back to Townsend's own writing. This track is called The Good's Gone.
Because
Already, another thing worth noting as you listen to this album is just is pretty much the stunning tone of Keith Moon's drums and how they are so front and center.
Oh, yeah.
And really unique and a bit, well, besides to say raucous, you know, just almost like a wild man. And it was such a weird thing because the main British acts, pretty much anybody, anywhere, it didn't matter that it was British, to be honest. I mean, drums were, it's, for the most part, still are a fairly controlled instrument where a lot of people rely on the drummer to keep things together and provide a bedrock for everything else to happen around it. The Who's method was completely the opposite. It was almost like the bass player and the guitar player were being bedrock to allow Keith Moon to lash out and go in so many different directions. Very, very difficult drummer to imitate. I can say that as a drummer who had to actually try to imitate him for a couple of shows. It was great fun, incredibly great fun, but not much discipline involved in the way that Keith Moon plays his drums. And Townsend's writing, actually, it's funny about this album, too, because it's one of these albums that starts off with what you would consider to be deep album tracks, and it gets better and better as the album goes on. We haven't heard any of the singles yet, but the songwriting gets more and more succinct and sharper, it seems, in my opinion, as the record begins to unfold. Another Townsend track from the album, the next one, called La 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 Lies, is another great example. I think that this was a single in Great Britain, if not necessarily a successful one. A lot of these tracks were released, and it makes for a great single. I mean, it's a brilliant song for a hit single. See what you think. Here's from the album, My Generation, La 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 Lies.
If I'm so lost without a friend, tell me who's this by my side. This girl with eyes like gems and reactions to your lies. Lies, la 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 la. You kicked me when I was down, and they hurt me, all those lies, lies, la 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 lies. I've got my girl and together we're strong. Smile, don't ever think you made me mad. I didn't listen to your lies, lies, la 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 la. I'm so lost without a friend. Tell me who's this by my side. This girl with eyes like gems and reactions to your lies. Lies, la 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 lies. I don't insist that you feel bad. I just want to see you smile. Don't ever think you made me mad. I didn't listen to your lies.
Roger Daltrey, Pete Townsend, John Entwistle, and Keith Moon all made up The Who, a brand new band.
That sounded
at this
like
point
an
in time.
Entwistle composition.
That was that's Pete Townsend. Oh, at this point in time, there's nothing here written, well, except for a group composition. Nothing here written by anybody except for Townsend in the band. Now, their second album, the album that followed this one, was much more of a democratic affair. And it's a much worse album for it. You know, you get two songs that were written by Roger Daltrey.
He was not much of a writer.
And he was not much of a writer at that point in time. Definitely not. John Entwistle was just beginning to find his own, you know, way. And Keith Moon as a writer was ridiculous. He basically, brought in like two surf compositions, you know, that were pretty funny. And we just got a call from a regular listener, Bobcat, who pointed out that that track, La 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 Lies, has an awful lot in common with the Beatles from A Hard Day's Night, Tell Me Why.
Ah.
The song Tell Me Why. And I'm like, as I'm listening, I'm like, yeah, there is. I don't know if it's in the melodic structure, but it makes sense because this album did come out about a year. I think it's hard to imagine that, but it was about a year after that. We're already back in 1965 at this point, the end of 1965 when this happened. So the British invasion is well underway here in America. In fact, it's already peaked. The Beatles at this point in time are already like releasing Rubber Soul. So in that sense, you could say that the Who almost sound like they're a bit of a throwback to earlier sounds, earlier styles. But what they were really doing was, again, is what happens over and over again in rock and roll is somebody comes back and they do something to revitalize something, to give it its earlier energy. Because, you know, the Beatles were getting more and more sophisticated and the Who come out with this album, which really doesn't really so much have any sophistication at all, except for the way that it is lyrically intelligent and the way that it represents a youthful perspective, which is really cool. Here's an example of what we're talking about. Again, from the same album, track number 5 on side one. Yeah, of course it was an album. It was vinyl then. This track is called Much Too Much.
Much too much to bear. Your love is hard and fast. Your love will always last. If it's you I need, I've got to pay the levy. To pay, 'cause your love's too heavy on me. And it's much too bad. If I ever leave you, darling, I hope you see that I really love you, but your love's too heavy. Time I could give all I had to you, but my enthusiasm waned and I can't bear the pain of doing what I don't wanna do. Much too bad. Your love is hard and fast. Your love will you are.
You still with me? As we play our way through.
Hanging in there.
The Who Sings My Generation. That's the American title. It's tough to find the American version of the album these days because when everything was reissued on CD, they went back to the original British versions. Although now, with bonus tracks and such, it doesn't really matter because a lot of the songs that would have been on one or the other are pretty much on the CD versions or what, you know, whatever you're going to, how are you going to get it? The whatever version you're going
the
to download.
Format.
Yeah. It will have the additional tracks. Although you might be wondering at this point in time, like, okay, these songs are good. You know, what's the big deal? Yeah, it's all right. Well, here's one reason. This next track was named the 11th greatest song of all time.
By whom?
By Rolling Stone magazine.
All right.
Put it that way. The album itself made number 236 on the greatest albums of all time. It was called the second greatest guitar album of all time by Mojo magazine.
Cool.
Here's probably the main reason why. The title track.
People try to put us to death.
Talking about my generation.
Just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old.
Talking about my
try to dig what we all say.
I'm
not trying to cause a big sensation.
I'm
just talking about my generation. What we all
say.
I'm trying to cause a big sensation. Just talking about my generation. Cause we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful cold.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old.
The stutter when he sings is such a cool idea. It's, again, such a great trick.
God, think about all the energy you have when you listen to that.
Oh, if you ever see a video of the band doing that song live, it's like something that's just almost truly fearsome.
Superhuman.
If you're imagining this in 1965 when somebody's actually smashing their instruments to bits on
yeah.
a stage, it was just undone. You know, nobody would have even considered anything remotely like that. And it was just such an amazingly wild thing to see. It was the biggest hit of The Who's career in England. It reached number two on the pop charts over there. They never had a number one hit
That's
single.
That's incredible.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what? That single in America peaked at number 74.
My goodness.
See what I mean? So we were totally clueless. We just, at the time, we weren't paying attention to The Who. The cool thing is, Pete says that his inspiration for that song actually came from Mose Allison, who wrote a song called Young Man Blues. Well, a young man ain't got nothing in the world these days. Hmm. And Mose did it like a quiet blues. The Who would eventually include that song on their own live album that would come out in, I think it was around probably around 1968.
Very cool.
And they did a great, super strong version of it. But Townsend's quoted as saying, my generation was, quote, very much about trying to find a place in society. And without Mose, I wouldn't have written My Generation. But probably, as it says here in Wikipedia, one of the most distilled statements of youthful rebellion in rock and roll history.
Absolutely.
Can't deny that. And now we're basically at the hit portion of the record. If you flip it over to side two, pretty stunning where we end up. We end up with another song that was a big hit eventually in Great Britain. But the problem with this is that this song was released 6 months after it was on the album. So although it was already well-known because a lot of people bought the album, it meant that it didn't chart well. So even in Great Britain, this next song stopped at number 41. In America, it barely got onto the Hot 100. It stopped at number 85, which means really almost nobody played it.
Hmm.
Ultimately, though, it is pretty much the anthem for the mod subculture. Became the name of the documentary that was written about the band. Certainly one of their best-known songs now, in retrospect. Here's The Who with The Kids Are All Right.
I don't mind other guys dancing with my girl. That's fine. I know them all pretty well. But I know sometimes I must get out.
Back-to-back youth anthems from the mid-60s.
Oh, yeah.
Probably ahead of the curve for just about anybody that was making music at that time, as far as making music that was expressive of youthful sentiment. I mentioned earlier that there were two James Brown covers on the album. Time for the other one right now. You'll probably remember the James Brown original. Not much reason to remember too much about Roger Daltrey struggling his way to imitate James Brown on this on his version. But nevertheless, this is where it falls on the album. So here it is, The Who with Please, Please, Please. Sometimes I feel like I'm a bit rough on Roger, but I mean, he was, you know, they were young and they were, you know, getting into American R&B and yeah, okay, it's not comparable to the original, but in its own way, it's cool. I think a lot of my opinion stems from an interview that I heard with John Lennon a long time ago, obviously in the 70s when Lennon was still alive. He appeared on WNEW at one time. He just walked into the studio, scared poor Dennis Elsis half to death, I think, when he was doing his show. And, John was talking about English bands and doing old versions of R&B and how they usually did it poorly, and he included himself and the Beatles in that. And it got me to thinking of the other English bands that were doing it, and I'm thinking, you know, he's really right. And I've really kind of ever since then never really, like, forgiven some of these artists. But I do. I'm sorry, Roger. It's not fair to judge you by that, because the rest of your work on this album is superb. But it's never better than it is on the songs written by Pete. And two of my favorite songs that were not hits, definitely deep LP tracks, are coming up right now. This track in particular, I totally love. It's pretty much a song about what happens if you do get famous and how everybody starts to tell stories about you. The lyrics are like genuinely funny. A lot of people picked this as one of their favorite Pete Townshend songs at the time. Pete came back at them by saying, "I hate it. I don't think it's successful at all." But I wonder if he must have gotten the fact that he wrote a very funny song. Here's from the album, The Who Sing My Generation. Here's It's Not True.
It's not true. You say I've been in prison. You say I've got a wife. You say I've had help doing everything throughout my life. It's not true, it's not true. I'm telling you, cause I'm a feeling you're aware. It's not true, so there.
Haven't got 11 kids, I weren't born in Baghdad. I'm not half Chinese either, and I didn't kill my dad.
It's not true, it's not true. I'm telling you, cause I'm up here and you're nowhere. It's not true, so there.
If you hear more rumors, you can just forget them too. Fools start the rumors, none of them are true.
It's not true, it's not true. I'm telling you, cause I'm up here and you're nowhere. It's not true, so there.
You say I've been in prison, you say I've got a wife, you say I've had help doing everything throughout my life. Yeah. I haven't got 11 kids, I were born in Baghdad. Chinese either, and I didn't kill my dad.
It's not true, it's not true. I'm telling you, cause I'm up here and you're aware. It's not true, so there. It's not true, it's not true. I'm telling you, cause I'm up here.
So there.
I think that stands the test of time quite well, that track.
That's cute.
It's not true. Off of the album, The Who Sings My Generation. As this entire show is dedicated to that album as one of my picks for the alternative top 40, one of the best albums to never actually reach the top 40 here in America. As usual, for all these things, I write an essay. So I may as well read it at this point in time. Why not? It's funny how we can collectively fool ourselves into false memories of our own culture. Most people my age feel very familiar with The Who. And when we talk about the band, we talk as though we remember them from the beginning, hearing My Generation when it was released. But that is simply untrue. So there. As a single, My Generation peaked at number 74 on the singles charts, which means most markets never touched it. More incredibly, the band's debut album never charted at all. In the middle of the British invasion, The Who's presence in America was negligible until I Can See for Miles hit number 9 on the pop charts in 1967. It remains their only top 10 hit here in America.
It's crazy.
Essentially, that means that most of America missed all of the band's earlier hits, which are now rock and roll classics.
Legendary.
I Can't Explain, Anyway, Anyhow, Anywhere, Substitute, The Kids Are All Right, I'm a Boy, Happy Jack, and Pictures of Lily all flew beneath the radar in America. We may think we remember hearing these songs in their prime between 1965 and 1966, but that's simply a delusion. Other than My Generation and The Kids Are All Right, the balance of these tracks never saw release on an American album until 1971's hit collection, Meaty, Beaty, Big and Bouncy.
Mm-hmm.
The Who were a distinctly English phenomenon and remained a virtually unknown entity in the U.S. until the Monterey Pop Festival. Searching my own memory, I don't think I ever held a Who album in my hands until 1970 when I saw Tommy in a friend's collection. Like everyone else, I had a lot of catching up to do, and over the years, I eventually found my way back to the earlier stuff. What a revelation to recognize that something as good as this debut album had been around for years. Like most British bands of this era, their interpretations of American blues and R&B is a bit spotty. Singer Roger Daltrey sounds lamentable as he strains to imitate James Brown not once but twice on this album. And I Don't Mind and Please, Please, Please. So you can ignore the cover tunes. It's hard to imagine why the band even bothered with them, especially since they could focus so much power and energy into their own material. Pete Townsend supplied stunningly articulate youth anthems, and the rhythm section of John Entwistle, the Ox, and Keith Moon tore through them with frighteningly exciting intensity. A Legal Matter and It's Not True convey attitude and humor simultaneously, which is no easy feat, judging by the competition. Who else was writing songs that so accurately represented the varying moods of my or his generation? Townsend's songs are so evocative that even Americans remember them as part of their collective youth, even though it's only self-deception. Here's another example. This next track was actually the B-side to the Kids Are All Right 45, was released, coincidentally, on the day that drummer Keith Moon was to marry his girlfriend Kim. It's the first song which actually has teenage divorce as its subject.
Oh.
And it's also the first song on the album that is sung by Pete, the first time Pete Townsend has sung at all, providing the lead vocal. Perhaps because, also weird coincidence, while Keith Moon was marrying his girlfriend while this track was being released, Roger Daltrey was in the middle of divorcing his own wife at the time. Probably caused a little bit of complications. But the name of the track, rather brilliantly, is A Legal Matter. Some attitude on that track. I've got to move quickly here now because I want to get in two more tracks before we're done. The British version of the album had a Bo Diddley song that was removed. It was called I'm a Man, and it was replaced with another track, which was actually the B-side of the track we just heard when it was finally released as a single after the album had come out, 6 months after the album. It's probably, so it's on the American version of the album, which I think made the American version a little bit better because it removed the cover song and added a good Pete Townsend song in its place. Here's that extra track. When it was released as a single, it was called Instant Party for some reason. I don't know why. The song obviously seems as if it should simply be called Circles. Here it is.
Circles, my head is going round in circles, my mind is calling.
Ooh, so much to talk about. We barely are going to squeeze in this album in our allotted hour. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I'm so glad to have you aboard for this show. I hope you can join us again on Friday. We continue our series dedicated to Eric Clapton, which is what we're doing at this point now on Friday. We'll be back next Wednesday, of course, with another edition of American at Radio. We'll leave you with the track that I was talking about on the album that gets a group co-write to it. This is credited to Townsend, Keith Moon, John Entwistle, and Nicky Hopkins. Not credited to Roger Daltrey because it's an instrumental, essentially a wild freakout. Basically, to end the record. Nicky Hopkins' name is there because he's the studio pianist on the records. So here's how we'll end our show with a track named after John Entwistle called The Ox. Take care, everybody.